So moving on to how to become a Hindu, as we know, Gurudeva put in all of his thoughts about religious conversion in there in a very systematic way. And one of the issues he raises is about ethical conversion. So as you know, the format for a good portion of the book is questions and answers. So the question that he answers is this. Are there ethics and scruples controlling conversion from one religion to another, such as corporations have in moving a top executive from one company to another? So Gurudeva basically says, no, there aren't, but there should be. So he says that religious leaders must all be tolerant of one another and be fair, and that what's needed is a code of ethics. And he goes on to talk about doctors and lawyers. He says, doctors don't go around slandering another doctor to get that doctor's patients. You know, they just don't do that. They have a code of ethics. They follow. They respect one another. They're professional. Lawyers, the same thing. They don't go around telling falsehoods about the lawyer down the street to get his clients. You know, they're being professional in the way they behave, and they're respected because of that. They're professionals with codes of ethics. They're in competition, but they're in a fair competition with one another. So Gurudeva encourages religions to function in the same way as professional people do. He says there must be a graceful exit from one religion and entrance into another. Just as a citizen formally changes his loyalty from one nation to another, legally and ethically. Ethics must be established among the religious leaders. Then these holy personages will command the members to reach out and seek new members in a most enlightened way. So when it comes down to the specifics for ethical conversion, phase one, Gurudeva emphasized education. If someone's going to convert from one religion to another, they need to study both religions very carefully. They need to understand them, understand how they agree, understand in what areas they differ. Shouldn't be an emotional experience. It should be based upon a sound intellectual understanding, not just of the religion you're converting into, but of the religion you're converting out of. So he suggested studying scripture, studying books on both religions. And then when that's been done for a while, Gurudeva developed the idea of a point-counterpoint. We take the major beliefs of each religion and compare them to the other and show in what ways they're the same and in what ways they're different. Very specific listing of point and counterpoint for the two religions. If you can do that in a clear way, then you really understand them both intellectually and you understand in what ways they're different and you could explain it to someone else very clearly. So that's the first phase of an ethical conversion, is study. Understanding both religions sufficiently. Gurudeva goes on to map out a phase two, which is to talk to the religious leader of the religion you want to leave. Give him a chance to talk you out of it. Give you a chance to talk him into it. Meet someone. Don't just leave without saying goodbye. You know, go to the person who is your religious leader or represents your community as a religious person and explain to them what you're doing and why. Let them have a chance to talk you out of it. In some instances, they may be able to because it's an emotional decision. It's not based in a clear understanding. It's not the wisest choice for you in terms of your natural beliefs. Another area that I forgot was in the book was an answer to this question. Is it true that Hindu leaders sometimes make overt efforts to proselytize and convert Jews, Muslims, and Christians? I would have thought the answer is no. That's the usual answer. Hindus don't proselytize. But Gurudeva says the answer is yes, a conditional yes. Yes, in the case of those who were converted in the wrong way. not just in general, Hindus don't go around converting, but if someone converted from Hinduism to Christianity and it wasn't a good conversion, it was fraud was involved, force, or allurements, those three possibilities, if that was the basis for the conversion, then it's your duty to try and convert them back. It's not just okay, but it's a duty. That's the way he puts it. Specifically, he says, up to the third generation. So the individual who converts and that individual's child should be approached to try and convert them back to Hinduism. But the third generation onward, you should let them be because they're well established in the new religion, whereas the first and second generation are not completely established yet in the religion. It takes three generations to become fully established in the new religion. So Gurudeva says specifically, this kind of proselytizing among our own, we consider our duty. For it is educating the young, meaning the second generation, and re-educating their parents. And it is not infringing on the other faiths who impose these unethical conversions. So that's a very interesting point, again, that I forgot was in the book. It has so many different approaches to conversion. And some of you have heard us make this point before. It's kind of an aside, but it's good opportunity to make it. We've talked about our own gotra that Gurudeva established, the Sri Subramunya Rishi Gotra, which those who receive Vishesha Diksha enter at that point. And Gurudeva made the same statement there. It takes three generations to establish the gotra. So the third generation, the parent, the child, and the child of the child. The child of the child is fully established, fully adjusted to the religious protocols and flows and approach of the gotra. But it takes three generations. Even if someone comes from a lineage, a strong Saivite family, you know, even if you go back and everybody you can remember is Saivite in your lineage, it still takes three generations because you're adjusting to a specific group or umpara, specific flows, specific approaches that your grandfather didn't follow, your father didn't follow. So there's something new there to adjust to. Something's a little different. So even for someone from a strong Saivite lineage, still takes three generations to adjust. So we have a ways to go before everyone's fully adjusted. Three generations, that is something to look forward to. There's a broad area, which I'll just mention in passing here, of conversion out of Hinduism, not by another religion, but by other beliefs, non-religious beliefs. Materialism, existentialism are two strong ones. Communism used to be strong, but unless you're in China, you know, it's not really a threat. In India, communist thought was very, very popular when we first started going there in the 1970s, but you know, not anymore. You know, now it's talk of technology and the internet and progress. Very different approach. But materialism and existentialism are still belief structures that do pull people out of being religious Hindus, particularly in the West. We're talking about just so fascinating, and there's an interesting example of this in immigrant communities. For example, there's a large immigrant community in Toronto from Sri Lanka. Because of the civil war in Sri Lanka, there's something like 200,000 to 300,000 Sri Lankan Tamil Hindus in the Toronto area at this point. It's the largest concentration in one place outside of Sri Lanka. And of course, most are first generation, are still present. And one of the problems they're going to face is their children are surrounded by something different than they faced. When they grew up, everyone in the area they grew up was of the same tradition. They were surrounded by Hindus practicing what they were practicing. And that's what they're used to. But they're going to find in Toronto, they're surrounded by people of other religions and people of no religion. and therefore their children are going to be exposed to something that they weren't exposed to and are going to need some guidance and strengthening. Otherwise, they can get pulled right out of their religion by being surrounded by so much materialism and existentialism. So we wrote a message which includes that idea. This was read just a few days ago on November 2nd in the Toronto area, the Sivathondan Nilayam of Canada held an event to honor Gurudeva's Mahasamadhi on November 2nd. They held it at the Richmond Hill Temple there. And they asked for a message. So we sent them this message to be read, which focuses on the children and this problem we're talking about, keeping the children in the religion and giving it some good thought. Greetings to all who are attending the first annual Mahasamadhi Guru Puja of Satguru Sivaya Subramanya Swami today, November 2nd, 2002, at the Richmond Hill Hindu Temple, Ontario, Canada. I believe if Gurudeva were sitting with you today, he would strongly encourage you to make the major priority educating the children in the religious practices and philosophy of Saivism. He would encourage you to show them how the Saiva Samyam will make them happier and more successful individuals. Gurudeva would suggest you involve them in the leadership of temple activities by having them form youth committees and giving them specific responsibilities at the different festivals to develop the feeling that this is their temple, not just the temple for the adults. Today in the West, many Hindu parents and Hindu religious leaders are appalled by the lack of interest that Hindu youth who have reached adulthood show in their religion. The best prevention for this problem, as well as the problem of conversion to another religion, is providing children a solid education in the beliefs and practices of their Saivite traditions. An excellent place to start is by teaching children Hinduism's code of conduct, the 10 yamas, restraints, and the 10 niyamas, observances, as they provide the foundation necessary for a sustained spiritual life. Gurudeva explains this beautifully in his book, Living with Shiva. Religion teaches us how to become better people, how to live as spiritual beings on this earth. This happens through living virtuously, following the natural and essential guidelines of Dharma. For Hindus, these guidelines are recorded in the Yamas and Niyamas, ancient scriptural injunctions for all aspects of human thought, attitude, and behavior. In Indian spiritual life, these Vedic restraints and observances are built into the character of children from a very early age.